Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, we welcome you in the day after another major champion. In this case, the great Jason Day got another PGA Tour win at the Bay Hill Invitational. It is fascinating. It really is fascinating how in the Florida swing they were all won by major champions, two by Adam Scott, Charles Schwartzel, and now Jason Day. The way Jason Day fought back yesterday, not having it, clearly not having it, was really strong to see that kind of bounce back out of him. The way that Kevin Chappell and Troy Merritt hung in there, and kudos to them for hanging in there in really tough circumstances. Props to them. And kudos, really, to... And before we get to that, even though Chappell hit in the bunker and failed to get up and down, even though Merritt hit it in the water on 18, I'm still impressed that they survived that back nine. It's a back nine where you can score, and it's a back nine that's also testy, and I'm really impressed by how they stood up. And then obviously Henrik Stenson with the water ball on 16, he needs to get past 16. That's a hole in a stretch that he really needs to improve on, but even he realizes that is a problem for him. So that's kind of the scope of the golf landscape in terms of Bay Hill. Now we move on to match play. We go into a bracket, a World Cup pool play. We go into the fun stuff, the one event per year where we play singles match play. Obviously, we have the Ryder Cup coming up this fall, but match play is a fun deal. And it's at a brand new venue, Austin Country Club, Austin, Texas. It's going to be hip. It's sponsored by Dell. The T markers are the inside of a chip, a memory chip, which is kind of cool. And since it's that time of year, March Madness, we have a selection show tonight on Golf Channel. And like what the NCAA men's basketball tournament did, they went to 2 hours. I don't know why Golf Channel went to 2 hours, but it went to 2 hours. They have Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Kite on the show. And as I welcome in Kyle DeManincourt to talk about March Madness and the NBA, Golf Channel has Texas football coach Charlie Strong and former University of Texas quarterback Colt McCoy on the show tonight. So they're trying to bring some University of Texas flair into the selection show. But, Kyle, would you watch a golf bracket selection show that's 2 hours long?
I mean, I may watch the end of it, but I don't know if I could sit through 2 hours of that. I mean, who knows? It could be fun, but I don't know if I could do the whole thing.
Oh. And remember, this is World Cup-style pool play, so we're watching ping-pong balls go around in a circle before one pops up with a number.
Could be interesting.
Well, tune in on Golf Channel, 7 Eastern, and you can watch it all live from the Paramount Theater, live in Austin, in front of a live studio audience. They have sold tickets in a theater to watch people choose ping-pong balls.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, it's something different, I guess, so why not?
Yes, I totally agree, and I don't blame them for trying to do something interesting for a dud. I mean, this show last year was 1 hour long at noon in the middle of the day. So they're clearly trying to jazz it up here. I just don't know how 2 hours will play. So we'll see how that turns out. Anyway, we're here to talk basketball. And what the heck happened to Northern Iowa last night? Let's start there. I missed it. I was on the phone with my cousin in California. I walked upstairs to have private, conversation time with her, thinking that game was in hand for Northern Iowa. And I come downstairs and I see the game in overtime. What the heck happened?
Yeah, I mean, I guess probably safe to say, and unfortunately for Northern Iowa, probably the biggest collapse maybe in tournament history. 12 points in 44 seconds. I mean, that's unheard of, especially in college ball. And the fact that A&M barely got to the free throw line during that span, maybe they shot up one or two free throws, that's even more impressive, that the way they were able to force turnovers and trap defensively. But, watching that game, and I had A&M. I have A&M going to my Final Four. So, of course, naturally, I'm pulling for A&M. But at the same time, it's good to see that Cinderella team, make a run. And I had turned it over to the Xavier game thinking, okay, this is over. Next thing I know, I glance up at the top of the screen, and it's got the little score box right there, and I see A&M's within four, within three, and I'm like, okay, I got to turn this back. And next thing you know, you're in double overtime, and it was wild, just by the fans, the reactions. I think there were vines on Twitter all about a couple of A&M fans that were crying hysterically. So it was, without question, one of the craziest games I personally have ever seen in this tournament.
You got to feel for those kids. Charles Barkley last night, right after, wanted to say choke. You could see that Sir Charles wanted to say choke, and he couldn't because these are college players and he wanted to be nice and he'd probably make the right call. But these guys know it. They flat out choked, and it's got to be an awful feeling to know for the rest of your lives that you almost went to the Sweet 16 and you choked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you caught any of the post-game press conference with some of the kids up at the podium with the coach, and I mean, it was tough to watch. I mean, obviously, they're all emotional and, very classy kids, the way they handled it. They spoke very highly, obviously, of A&M, gave them the credit that they deserved. But, I mean, coming off that half-court game winner, 2 days before that, and then experiencing what they did yesterday, I can't imagine or can't remember, for that fact, any team with that kind of emotional roller coaster within a two-day span in this tournament. So, and especially, Northern Iowa, they're the one team, I guess, at this point, we would have been the Cinderella team left in this tournament. And, for that to happen, it's extremely unfortunate, and it's going to be tough for them to live with. You're right, probably their entire lives, I'm sure they're always going to dwell on that. But at the same time, I guess they can look back at the previous game, the half-court shot, and say, hey, we're part of something really special with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you talked about the Xavier game. That dude from Wisconsin, it's one thing to hit a clutch shot. It's one thing to hit a buzzer beater, like a half-court buzzer beater, Steph Curry style, like we saw earlier in the weekend. But to hit a fadeaway three with a hand in the face, that's just straight-up skills, and you got to give your props to Wisconsin for making the shot, and a tough shot in a huge moment.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Like you said, we've never seen really a half-court game winner in this tournament like we saw with Northern Iowa, but that shot from Wisconsin, the play design coming off that timeout to get him some separation and just being able to elevate in the corner, the toughest shot on the basketball court, that corner three, and the way he was able to elevate and just get it up over his defender, I mean, that was, I didn't think it was going in, to be honest, but you could tell on his follow through and his reaction, he felt good about it, and sure enough, it went in. And I mean, got to give Wisconsin a ton of credit. I mean, Bo Ryan, retiring halfway through the year and coming off a tough defeat in the championship last year to Duke. And now here they are back in the Sweet 16. And it's one of those gritty teams. They just know how to play basketball the right way.
And what's interesting about that is you look at Wisconsin, they're a perennial tournament powerhouse. Texas A&M is not. Texas A&M obviously is no more for Johnny Football than anything else. They're not one of those who has been here 10,000 times, and they were the more experienced team and showed the poise late that you would have expected out of somebody else, like a Wisconsin. And Wisconsin, obviously, stepped up in a big spot and made that shot. And you got to think, it's almost good for them that they have this week to kind of reset, because having to bounce back one or two days later, if that's what was the case, you know, if this had been earlier in the weekend, would have been incredibly tough for Wisconsin. It's tough to bounce back when you make a big shot and have that emotional rise like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're especially being so young, these kids are, and it's like you, like I said earlier, it's an emotional roller coaster. So they've got to come back down to earth a little bit. But you know, the good thing about Wisconsin is they've been here before. I mean, they're, you know, they're experienced. They have this, you know, on their resume already. So I don't see them getting rattled or living in the moment of yesterday. Yeah, live in the moment for a couple of days, but then regroup, focus on Notre Dame, and go from there. Because I mean, the way Notre Dame has been playing, they're beatable. I really do think Wisconsin is going to beat Notre Dame. But again, the tournament, anything can happen.
And you know, Koenig, obviously, big shot, big moment. He's a hero now in Madison and everywhere else now for a long time. Let's go through these teams that are left. Obviously, the teams that are going to Philly is just completely and utterly stacked. I mean, it's just ridiculous who's going to Philly in the East region. What's interesting, as you just pointed out, is that we no longer have really any, no longer have any Cinderellas left. So let's talk about Philly first. Notre Dame, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Indiana. That's just a ridiculous bunch. For me, you know, for me, I love Yogi Ferrell. I love what I've seen out of Yogi Ferrell. I still believe that North Carolina comes out of this region, but what's your take?
Yeah, I agree. I actually had Indiana beating Kentucky a couple days ago, so I love the poise of Indiana. Like you said, Ferrell is fantastic. He's grown so much over his course of his college career. Love Tom Crean. I love his energy as a college coach. I think he's fantastic. But I think at the end of the day, North Carolina has just got too much firepower. Barring, you know, some kind of collapse, or they do have, I guess, an inability sometimes to hit the outside shot, North Carolina. So, I mean, if that really gets away from them, I could see Indiana making it a game. But regardless, it'll be tight, but I think North Carolina will end up pulling it out.
And then you move on to Louisville and Villanova, which I think is a lot of people's sexy team, faces a Miami squad that's looked very impressive. And then you've got Kansas and Maryland. To me, Kansas-Villanova, if that becomes the Elite Eight matchup, is a fascinating matchup. You've got a Kansas team that is steady and has veteran leadership with Perry Ellis against a Nova team that, as I said, it's a sexy pick for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that region, the teams that are left, I mean, they're four quality teams. I personally have Kansas and Miami in the Elite Eight. I think, and like you said, Villanova is a great team. Jay Wright, obviously a great coach. I just like Miami's athleticism and, you know, having watched them a lot, especially in this tournament. They get after the ball. They got some big guys. They like to rebound. But, again, Villanova's a very smart team. They're very poised. So that could go either way. And even Maryland with Kansas, Maryland's a very good team. They could definitely push Kansas to the limit. But at the same time, I think Kansas, again, is too strong. They're one of the best rebounding teams in the country. And I think Kansas moves on.
And then we move on to Anaheim, which has my national championship team in Oklahoma facing this Texas A&M team that's suddenly gotten this huge lucky break and is clearly on borrowed time. And then Duke and Oregon. I just love Buddy Hield. I love what he's done all year. I think Oklahoma makes it out of here.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma they've looked good. Obviously, they've had some close ones, but again, like the tournament time, and VCU is always a good team when they just beat. And yeah, A&M, it's a miracle they are in this position. I have A&M, like I said earlier, going to the Final Four. This is one of those games where, for me, it was an absolute toss-up. I think they're very evenly matched, and it could come down to Buddy just going off and showing why he's probably going to be a top 10 draft pick in this upcoming draft in the NBA. So I like the matchup of Buddy versus House for A&M. I think that's two NBA-type players. If you look at House for A&M, he's got that NBA prototypical body. He's big. He's athletic. He can shoot. So I think that's going to be a great matchup. I personally like A&M, but it really could go either way. It's a toss-up at this point.
And then we get to your buddies in Chicago. Virginia, Iowa State, Gonzaga, and Syracuse, the team that a lot of people were shocked is even in the darn tournament. is now in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you look at that region, it's a pretty beat up region as far as some of the big guys where they're supposed to be. Obviously Michigan State losing probably the biggest upset in tournament history. A lot of people, I'm sure, are surprised by these teams that are in it right now. Obviously Virginia, they're a national championship type team, and, you know, I'm not surprised by them. Iowa State, you know, they had a rough, you know, round last year, losing the first round, but they've come back stronger this year. And then you got Gonzaga and Cuse, like you said. I mean, I didn't have either of these teams coming, and I'm a big Syracuse fan, of course. I wasn't really betting with my heart on that one, but, you know, I'm glad, obviously, they're in the situation. And, you know, I think Gonzaga poses a tough test, but I love the way Syracuse is defending right now. I think the zone is just giving teams a lot of problems, especially teams that are not used to it. And if Syracuse can just keep knocking down their shots, their three-pointers especially, they're going to be very, very tough to beat. I think Virginia is going to advance over Iowa State, and I like Syracuse.
It's, you know, sometimes just like with Texas A&M, you get a team like Syracuse that feels like they're on borrowed time. You know, who cares? You know, we can free roll.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to be here, and they wind up going a long way. Who right now is the best team you've seen in the whole tournament?
Well, you know, I mean, Kansas, obviously, just because they, you know, they're the favorite of most people, most experts. UConn gave them some trouble, but, you know, UConn is always a good team this time of the year. They always have a little magic in March. I like Kansas. I think they are the best top-to-bottom overall team. I think people, honestly, are sleeping on Virginia a little bit. I think everybody was expecting that Virginia-Michigan State matchup, and most had Michigan State advancing. So I think Virginia at this point, if you look at the draw, has the easiest draw to the Final Four. And that's not to say they're going to get there, obviously. If Cuse were to advance over Gonzaga and versus Virginia, those teams clearly know each other. And I think Virginia only beat them earlier by 8 points or so. So that could go either way, turning time. But I think overall, though, Kansas right now is the strongest team in the entire tournament.
I still think we're going to end up with Oklahoma as the national champion. I just, they seem, and I haven't watched as much as you have, but still, I just have a good feeling about Oklahoma. And
yeah,
I think
they're fantastic, yeah.
And this team's obviously good enough to get past a veteran Kansas team, in my belief. Let's flip to the NBA. Anthony Davis has been playing with torn labrums. What the heck?
It seems that Anthony Davis has been playing with a lot of injuries and ailments this year. And I love Anthony Davis. I mean, he's my fantasy team, so I'm a little upset right now. But obviously, you just want him to get better. He's still young, very young. It's a shame he's not going to be part of the Olympics, though. I mean, he's, you know, one of the building, you know, foundations for the NBA right now. But, yeah, they're out of the playoff race. There's no point in putting him out there if he's got all these ailments. Let him have the surgery on the shoulder, whatever he's got to get done on his knee. Heal up, and, you know, they're going to get a good draft pick. They just need to add some perimeter. Maybe Buddy Hill will be a good player for the Pelicans. So, you know, let him sit the rest of the season out, get ready for next year, then, you know, get ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's just weird. It kind of came out of nowhere, the headline, which is why I was so surprised. What's interesting to me, you look at Golden State and San Antonio, and I think a lot of people want to make a lot out of that game because of, the performance, especially the defensive performance from San Antonio, which was exquisite. That's as bad as I've seen Steph all year. But, obviously, the Warriors were missing people. So do you look at this loss as an anomaly, or do you think that San Antonio is the one team that, because of how well they play defense, will be able to give Golden State some problems come May or June?
I mean, I think both of what you just said. Anomaly as far as exactly what you said, Iguodala wasn't there, Bogut wasn't there. I mean, those are two key contributors. Iguodala's defense, you know, Kawhi is important. Bogut, just with his passing ability, he clogs the middle, he rebounds. So they obviously had to shorten their rotation. And then the other side of it, yeah, the Spurs are the biggest threat to the Warriors. They clearly don't fear them as much as Popovich wants to make that known to everybody that he loses sleep over this team, which I don't buy it. I think it's just Pop being Pop. I think with the experience and the type of players that the Spurs have, that they really don't fear anyone. It's just a matter of health with them going into the playoffs, you know, staying healthy throughout. But you look at both teams, and they're both fantastic at home. I mean, both undefeated at home. I mean, I don't know if it's ever happened in NBA history where two teams in the same conference have gone undefeated at home. I'd love to know if that was a stat, if there's some evidence or record on that. But I think the Spurs are the biggest threat, obviously, to Golden State. And the fact that they meet, I think, two more times, I mean, that's it's going to make for good TV, pending everybody's healthy. But, you know, Steve Kerr and Popovich, they like to play chess, and especially to play for Pop, so he knows his tricks. So I wouldn't be surprised if certain guys sit out of those last two matchups.
As you hinted, if I remember what Mike Breen said correctly, the best anybody has gone at home in a season is 40-1. The Celtics did it once.
Okay.
So the fact that it could happen for one team, nonetheless two teams, is absolutely astonishing.
Yep.
I'm curious on something. The Knicks have had a lot of off-the-court issues lately related to Carmelo and does Carmelo want to be here and migraines and talking back to people and should he have put out a statement apologizing for cursing at a fan and does Phil want to coach just home games, which seems like something you would see in a rec league. I'll coach the games that are in my town, but for the town that's, you know, 2 hours from now, nah, I'm not going to coach. It just seems bizarre. What's your take on what the heck's going on with the Knicks?
Well, right now, I mean, they're the Knicks. It's a complete mess. The sad part is that they have some talent, obviously. Porzingis has developed way quicker than anybody would have expected. The problem is it's Phil, and I love Phil Jackson, of course. My affinity for Phil is very high, but he's almost loyal to a fault at times. And, you know, if he ends up keeping Rambis on, is the head coach removes the interim tag and they continue to run the triangle next year. It doesn't seem suited for today's NBA anymore, the triangle offense. I know Rajon Rondo is one of their key targets in free agency. I know Carmelo's made it pretty clear that he likes Rondo, but Rondo in the triangle, personally, I don't think he would be a good fit at all. Rondo's a very free player. He likes to create on his own. He likes the freedom. I don't see the triangle, you know, allowing him to do that. But as far as Carmelo, I mean, I don't know if it's at the point now where they just need a fresh start, and Carmelo does as well. But at the same time, you know, he chose this situation when he could have chosen the Bulls or another contender, and he knows what he got himself into. So now it's almost like, hey, suck it up. You got your money. Now find a way to make it work.
It's utterly bizarre. I can't believe what I'm reading sometimes. You know, I would like to know why the Knicks on the court are having problems and not why off the court they're having all these issues. LeBron talks about leaving, or he doesn't talk about leaving, or he subliminally tweets about brotherhood or posts Instagram pictures about how as friends we rise above hard times and come together when the sky is blue, but when the sky is gray, you must be tested, and that's when you find out what your true devoted soul is. I don't know what LeBron's saying. Have you have any idea what LeBron is saying?
To be honest, no. I just wish he would stop with all the social media stuff. I mean, look, you're the best player, arguably the best player in the world still to this day. Focus on what you have to do. You know, you won two games in the finals last year. You're only a game up right now for the one spot in the East. And look, I get that rest and health is more important, but if you were by far and away going into the season projected as one of the best teams in the league and you're a game up, nothing against take away from Toronto. They're a good team. Do I think they're close to Cleveland's level? No, I don't. I just, you know, I've watched Toronto plenty this year, and I, you know, they have great backcourt, one of the best in the league, but in the playoffs, there's not a lot of other pieces on that team that can do damage, and maybe that's Cleveland's thinking, but at the same time, you want that home court advantage if you do face Toronto. So I just think LeBron needs to just keep it on the court, focus on what you got to do, and look, whatever he does after this year, whether they win or not, I'm assuming he's going to stay, but you never know with LeBron. I think it would be a bad, bad look if he does it all over again and leaves. But again, who knows? So maybe he's just trying to mess with people at this point.
I am so glad to know that there's somebody else as equally confused as I am. That feel a lot better. Your Bulls sitting there in the eighth spot, tied with Detroit. In terms of games back, they obviously have the upper hand on a tiebreaker. What's up with this Bulls team? Why have they struggled? You know, so many people thought, are they the complementary piece to Cleveland? Why have they struggled?
Health. I mean, I hate to use that as an excuse, but, the Bulls, the last 4 or 5 years, have been probably the most banged-up team in the NBA. And this year, for whatever reason, they've been more banged up than in the past. And, you know, bringing Hoiberg in was supposed to be, you know, a good thing for the health of these guys and, you know, watching their minutes. But, you know, Butler missed a chunk of time. Rose, obviously, with his, you know, little knick-knack injuries, and he'll miss a game every now and then. Pau Gasol has been hurt. He's put on a lot of miles this year at his age. Todd Gibson's missed time. I mean, they have – you could go through their entire roster, and at least almost every player that has a role has missed time. And that's been the reason why they're barely in the playoffs at this point. They just can never seem to get everybody on the court at the same time. But with that said, you know, if they can somehow – and I know this is anything can happen in the playoffs, but they can match up with Toronto in that first round. That's the one team. Toronto, the Bulls swept them this year, 4-0. For some reason, they match up very well against Toronto. And I think it's a team Toronto doesn't want to see, especially in the first round. If they can match up with Toronto, I think anything is possible in that series. I really do.
Is it worth it? You know, because we hear so much about tanking and what Philly's done. Is it worth it to win one series?
You know, and that's the question that all these, you know, Bulls fans are asking. Of course, I mean, you want to get in the playoffs. You know, you want to see your team at least have a chance. And if it wasn't worth it, then they should have traded Gasol at the trade deadline, got another couple assets, maybe got a, you know, draft pick or something. But, you know, at this point, you know, go for it. Yeah, you may not win at all, and big deal, you win one series. But you know what? You win a series, I guess. I mean, there's got to be some kind of, like, light at the end of the tunnel with that. For a team as big of a market as Chicago, and they're – obviously, their history and what, you know, they've accomplished, you'd like to go further, and that this was the year where they, you know, the last ride with this core group, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen, barring a miracle, but hey, get in the playoffs and see what happens.
You know, I'm not sure about you, Kyle, but I feel like we have seen a sea change in how fast tank the season, give up on the season, you know, suck for the pick has come up. It just seems like this has become a more frequent thing. And, you know, obviously this year the Ben Simmons sweepstakes is all what it's about. But it seems like people are just talking about, you know, just, you know, I can't say the word, but, you know, essentially who cares about the season so much earlier?
Yeah. Now,
I don't get the
tanking thing. I don't get – and, again, Philly has just – you know, messed up everybody's head here with this whole tanking thing, and it's kind of ruined some of the credibility, I suppose. But again, I'll give Philly a little credit in that they brought Jerry Colangelo in, because that guy's a basketball genius, and if anybody can turn them around, it's him. And they do have some good assets. It's just a matter of, hey, let's try to do something with them this time. So I don't know. You see some of these teams trying to tank and get into the lottery and get a good pick, but that's, you know, you're talking about college kids who haven't done a thing in the NBA yet, and you're putting a lot of pressure on them to turn a franchise around, and I think that's really unfair. Hopefully, going forward, I don't know what the NBA can possibly do about tanking. I know they hate the label of it, but it is what it is for at this point. They just got to hope that these teams will eventually get better.
Real quick, is 2017 or the 2016-2017 season finally the year that Philly gets their act together and competes to be a good basketball team?
I mean, hey, they're going to have some good players. I mean, just, you know, they'll get Embiid back, Joel Embiid. Hopefully you put him with Okafor, Noel. I mean, that's a pretty intimidating front court, if you ask me. I don't care how young they are. And they're going to obviously have another good pick. I think they have 3 picks in the first round or something like that this year. So maybe they can swap some picks and try to get a superstar if someone wants to go there. At some point, you got to try to make an effort to get better now. You can't just keep, you know, building for the future.
20 seconds right now, as we sit here on March 21st, your NBA Finals matchup is?
Warriors and Cavs. I'm sticking with what I had earlier in the year, and I think the Warriors are going to get it done.
Next time you're on, we have to talk about Toronto, because what they've done, I think, is fascinating, and they've got a country behind them. Not just a city, not just a region, but a country, and there's a fascinating component. Because there's a passion there that's very unique. And Cleveland, with all their problems internally, sometimes being on one united front can be good enough. So we'll talk about that next time. And always good for having you on Teeing It Up.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
That's the name of the show. We'll see you next week. Have a great night, everybody.